Well, top of the morning to you. It is Thursday. It is the day after Halloween, and we're all coming off of an extended sugar high, I'm sure. Hey, welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom. Thank you so much for joining us today. And before we get underway, a reminder, you are always welcome to be part of the conversation, no matter and wherever it may wander. By phone and email, 850-414-1234 is the telephone number. You can also email us, perspectives@wfsu.org. We have a Twitter account, too, which is @WFSUPerspective. Well, here we are into November, which is, on top of so many other observances, National Adoption Month, and we're going to be seeing a lot of stories about joyous families adopting kids out of foster care. We're also going to be kind of marveling at the character of the parents and hoping that the kids who are now in those situations have wonderfully positive outcomes and bright futures and just a whole world waiting for them. But while those events are life-changing, we got to also recall that there are more than 400,000 American kids in foster care. And according to the Ackerman Institute for the Family, their average length of stay is somewhere in the neighborhood of 25.3 months. And they have rates of post-traumatic stress disorder that are similar to veterans who are returning from combat zones, which seems incomprehensible. Also, kids who age out of foster care without a family are four times likelier to enter the criminal justice system as adults and 17 times likelier to be homeless by the age of 21. And this even after the Florida legislature has put in place some new extensions of that aging out process to make it a little bit less traumatic and a little bit more user-friendly, if we will. So anyway, today we're going to talk about what all of us can do to reduce child abuse and abandonment and neglect. And we have some really great folks to talk about that. Five of them in total, from an adoption attorney to the parents and advocates of adopted kids to a young woman who was adopted out of foster care. So we want you guys to meet these folks, and we're going to go around the table here, first in Tallahassee and then through the auspices of WUFT down at the University of Florida in Gainesville, where we have some folks lined up too. So let's go around. First, we're going to meet Shannon Carroll, Tallahassee-based adoptive mother of seven children. Yes. Is that true, Shannon?
Yes. Yes, today it is true. Yes.
Well, we can't wait to hear some of those stories. And I noticed that you look relaxed. You look somewhat rested, not too stressed out.
Today, yes. Yes. Being around all these smiling faces, I think, helps a lot.
Okay. See, we got some therapeutic value here going on, guys. That's really good. We also want to say hi to Michelle Scott, Florida State University senior, majoring in statistics. We've got to get together after the election. You can help us analyze all this stuff. Now, you were in foster care from ages 3 to 7, during which you had 14 placements before being adopted. And again, you look somewhat okay.
I made it out alive. Yep, it's been a good day, and I'm happy to be here.
We are really happy to have you here with us too, Michelle. Thank you much for coming in here. And an old friend of ours, Jane Johnson, Director of Advocacy, and that's easy for me to say, how about you? At the Florida Council for Community Mental Health, former Chief of Staff at the Department of Children and Families, Director of the Agency for Persons with Disabilities, all of that on your resume. And you have worked with Shannon too, Jane, right?
I have. I've been a guardian ad litem for the past 10 years also. So in that capacity, Shannon and I cared for a child who I'm still with.
Okay, well, we're going to use you for a little setup here in just a moment. But first, let's meet the folks who are joining us from the studios of WUFT-FM at the University of Florida in Gainesville. Mary Kay joins us. Mary Kay Wimsett, adoption attorney practicing throughout Northeast Florida, primarily in the 8th Circuit. She's finalized over 3,000 adoptions and also trains guardian ad litem staff attorneys statewide in adoption law. Mary Kay, thanks so much for joining us today.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. And right next to you is Dr. Marty Gillen, professor at University of Florida, faculty advisor to Gator Strong Families, the university's support group for foster families. You've fostered 11 kids and adopted two, and you also teach children trauma and resiliency. Dr. Marty, thank you for being part of the discussion as well.
Thank you. And I'm also a guardian ad litem volunteer as well.
All right. We got a bunch of GAL folks hanging around here, I noticed, right?
Woohoo!
I like old home week at guardian ad litem. Jane Johnson, let's start with you. What's the background here on November being National Adoption Month? What's the genesis of that whole observance?
Well, I'm not going to pull these facts out of my back pocket. I did do some research before the show, and it was really interesting. Back in 1976, Governor Michael Dukakis in Massachusetts created an adoption week in the state of Massachusetts. And then from there, 4 years later, the Congress actually passed the Adoption Assistance and Child Welfare Act, which mandated adoption assistance payments to individuals who agreed to adopt children. So states finally had subsidies that they were able to pay out that were financed by the federal government. 4 years later, President Ronald Reagan declared National Adoption Week for the entire country. And then 11 years after that, President Clinton thought that was such a great idea, he expanded it to National Adoption Month. So the history is important because it shows the value and the what you can do by raising awareness about something. You can really make it bigger, make more people aware of it. And so I'm hoping that this show has the same impact, that we can raise more awareness so people who didn't understand something or hadn't considered something before might get involved with kids out there.
But let me throw something out kind of as an opening statement, I guess, of problem. Most of us have had some kind of, you know, collegiate background, and that always happens that when you go to a course, whether it's philosophy or statistics or any of these other things where you have a statement of problem. How big is adoption just in Florida? Who has some numbers on that?
I know that over 4,000 kids were adopted out of the foster care system in Florida last year. And each year for probably the past 10 years, that number has increased year over year, which we take great pride in. And people, you know, kind of say that, wow, isn't that great? But it's important to remember that every adoption also represents a failure of another family. So it's adoption is sort of a, you know, it's a bittersweet thing. It's wonderful that families are willing to step in and adopt a child that they didn't give birth to. But at the same time, another family has struggled to the point of losing legal custody of that child. And it is a big problem, and it continues to grow. And especially with the opioid epidemic, I think we're seeing more and more parents unable to care for their children and then lose their parental rights. So it's something that we really need to focus more attention on and hopefully go upstream on so that we can maybe help kids and parents before the family falls apart.
Yeah, well, Dr. Marty Gillen down in Gainesville, I think you've done some studies on this as well here. That trend line that Jane Johnson just talked about, the fact that this wonderful and kind of rose-colored glass myth of the nuclear American family, that is the default position. And yet it seems as though the statistics show that we are kind of headed in the opposite direction, maybe?
So when you look at trauma and you think about the kids, there's a huge amount of kids we're seeing, like Jane said, coming into care for opioid exposure, parents on drugs, you know, different things like that. But, you know, it's much larger than that when you think about trauma and you think about risk factors. And we have seen a huge uptick in that, especially, you know, throughout Florida. And you think about adoption numbers, there's over 100,000 kids in the U.S. that are legally free for adoption.
Okay, Michelle Scott, so, what led to your situation of getting into the system, the foster care, and ultimately adoption?
So my biological father was never in the picture. My biological mom was severely schizophrenic, so she was unable to care for me, which ultimately resulted in me in the system. So, you know, I spent 6 years in the system, lots of different placements. But then my mom actually is the director of the Guardian Ad Litem program in Osceola County. And my guardian ad litem, her name is Miss Dummery, couldn't see me one day, which led to my mom just coming to stop in. And then it just kind of went, you know, we just kind of like fell in love with each other. And I mingled with the family wonderfully, and it was kind of like a match made in heaven.
Well, it was a great outcome for you, but not all kids have that. Or in the case of, you, Shannon, where a parent comes in and provides that. What were the backstories on your kids, at least some of them?
Yeah, well, without sharing detailed information, being that they're all minors still, we have a plethora of different needs in our home, and that can all of them came diagnosed with attention deficit disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder. A couple were actually diagnosed with reactive attachment disorder. And then we have fostered and adopted multiple children that have different diagnoses, from cerebral palsy to our daughter used to be fed via G-tube and be on a seven-month-old level, even though she was 10 years old when we met her. So we have a whole bunch of different things that we touch on, including, one of our sons was even adopted from an adoption disruption, and that's a whole nother topic that we won't probably get into in the air today. But yeah, so we have a big undertaking for sure.
How do they all get along?
Oh, if you've ever met my kids, they're awesome. Yeah, all you gotta do is come to our farm.
I've been there, and they really are, and they all get it. Is really is a family. Even the animals, it's a community.
I think that helps sometimes when you bring in, you know, four-legged children to kind of help the two-legged along. Sometimes that can be a therapeutic kind of thing as well.
That's been scientifically proven. Yes,
animal therapy is very real, and the empathy and compassion that have been grown in our children since doing what we do has been absolutely astounding.
So you get a kid, get a cat. That's what I say.
Or a dog.
Or a dog.
Or a goat.
Or a guinea pig, or whatever. 850-414-1234. Our topic on perspectives today, it focuses on foster parenting, adoption, and the stories that come out of those interesting interactions. We'd love to hear from you, too. If you have been a foster parent, or you have been a foster child, or you have been involved in the adoption process in some way. Would love to hear that story at 850-414-1234, or you can send us an email to perspectives@wfsu.org. A quick time out, and we'll be right back. Back on Perspectives, we've adopted a new format here today as we talk about kids and parents and trying to bring more of those two groups together here. And a reminder, you can always find us online, usually within 24 hours of when the program actually airs on the radio. Just go to our website, wfsu.org, go to the radio section, pull down the programs menu, you will find Perspectives. Click on that, and we'll have the latest program up for you just as quickly as we possibly can as we continue our discussion on adoption. Mary Kay Wimsett, as an adoption attorney, now we've heard some really, really good stories so far in our discussion today, but they don't always work out, do they?
Unfortunately, that can happen, although I will say there are a lot of resources in place, and in fact, if you adopt through the foster care system, the state of Florida actually has funds set aside for post-adoption support where you can receive counseling, you can receive referrals for additional resources. So the state, and that is a relatively new thing, that the state is making every effort possible to help put that support in place so that there will be support post-adoption. One thing I'd like to just talk about, Tom, if I may, is about the subsidy, because I think a lot of people are not aware of that. They're, one of the big myths about adoption is that it is very expensive and that many families cannot afford it. But if you adopt from the foster care system, you actually pay nothing. And in fact, there's a lot of support offered to families who adopt through the foster care system. There is a subsidy that comes from that adoption that covers the legal costs of the adoption. There's a monthly stipend of at least $417, and that stipend can actually be much more than that if the child has significant medical needs or any type of special need, that there can be an increase in that subsidy. The child also gets Medicaid until the child is 18, and then the child gets college tuition for 4 years to any state school in Florida, which is really tremendous. We've even recently, Guardian Ad Litem was part of a bill that we passed this recent session that now enables subsidy for children even up to the age of 21 if they are adopted between the ages of 16 and 18. So we're really making an effort in Florida to give those families the support that they need. Two other things I'd be remiss if I didn't mention as part of the financial incentive to adopt through the foster care system is that we also have a state employee bonus of $10,000 for any state employee that adopts through the foster care system. And then there's also the adoption tax credit. All families that adopt through the foster care system in Florida are eligible for the full amount of the adoption tax credit, which is pretty amazing. You don't have to have costs. You get that full amount, which this year it's over $13,000. It adjusts each year with the cost of living, so it goes up a little bit each year. So there's some pretty tremendous financial benefits to adopting through the foster care system.
So, Jane Johnson, it sounds like that there are, besides being all the financial support mechanisms that are in place for that, there's also some help for parents who may, and I know, Shannon, you never feel overwhelmed or anything, but if you if you are having some adjustment difficulties or just, you know, we need some help getting the kids settled in. Those things are available too, right?
Yes, and those are probably just as important as the financial, because emotionally it can be overwhelming, and for both the adoptive parents and for the children. But Florida has a pretty robust network of adoption support groups. You know, they are volunteer, and it's just different adoptive families who come together and they support each other. They have social events. So there's that. But then also the state does make those things available. But I guess all of that is the incredibly important infrastructure, kind of like we need a system of highways and cars, but people need to drive safely. And that's something that people choose to do. So I think that you can put all that together, but if you don't have the genuine love and affection and the community support in the decisions that you make, then I think bringing communities together in adoption and recognizing the needs of kids that may not be your own or may not look like your own, that's even just as important as all that infrastructure, because we could have great highways, but if people don't drive safely, it's going to be a dangerous place. And I don't want to overlook they're equally important, and you don't have to be involved in the system directly to have an impact. You can just be supportive of someone who has adopted someone. When you're in the grocery store and you see someone with a child who doesn't look anything like their mother and their mom's struggling, don't look away and be judgmental. You know, look to them and say, "Can I help you?" I would hope that people realize that this is something that we're all in together, and the more people who become involved and try to support the idea of picking up kids whose parents weren't able to care for them, the better off we will all be. And it's incredibly rewarding personally when you do that.
But going through it from the other end, and if I could, Michelle, Scott, if I could ask you about that, since you had a lot of different experiences there, overall, was that useful, or were there times when you just thought, "Well, someone please just kind of step up, you know, like your mom did ultimately, and just say, well, you know, just take care of me, please?"
No, definitely. I mean, all around, the foster care system wasn't incredibly negative in my experience, but I remember, you know, each placement I would move to, I would, you know, walk into a new home with a new family, new foster kids, and I would just ask myself, is this the last one? You know, like, when am I going to stop being moved? I just want, you know, you just want consistency, especially as a child. You just want unconditional love. So there were definitely times where I was really discouraged, and my guardian ad litem, Dawn Marie, she told me that, you know, just one day she came to visit me, and I was just crying, saying, like, "I just want someone to adopt me. I'm just so sick of being moved," you know. So it definitely takes a toll on you emotionally. But, you know, I just tried to stay really positive through it, and it ended up working out wonderfully and perfectly in my experience.
Okay, well, all of that, should we say, trial by or baptism by fire, did you come out stronger in the end?
Absolutely. I would not be the person I am today without going through foster care. It taught me a lot about myself. I grew up really fast, you know, just because you don't really have that parental unit to lean on, you know, emotionally and for support. So you grow up faster, definitely, and you mature faster. But it's helped me as an all-around adult, you know, just dealing with everyday life.
And for your kids, Shannon, the seven that you have, had some of them been through multiple placements before they got to your home?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Four of our seven we adopted over the age of eight. They were definitely passed around before we became their landing place.
Yeah, does that make it tougher? Well, when they've been through a whole bunch of things?
Oh, yeah, I'm like almost in tears listening to Michelle over here because, I mean, that these are the same things that reverberated back through our kids. You know, my four-year-old, when we were telling her we were going to adopt her, you know, saying, "You mean I don't have to move again?" You know, and then, and there's other reactions, you know, our seven-year-old freaked out and wanted to run away. She did that a couple times. So, you know, it's hard for their little brains to grasp such conflict and change. And like you said, like war victims, combat, it's the same traumatic stress. Absolutely.
Yeah, Dr. Murray Gillen, talk about your experience with the 11 kids you've had, the two of which then went on to be adopted into your household. Did you have same kind of thing that that Shannon's been talking about?
We have experienced a lot of that. And to piggyback on some of what Michelle was saying about, you know, going into different families, I remember back in 2015, we had a sibling group, four-year-old and nine-year-old at the time placed with us, had been in care for several years and multiple placements. When he was brought to our home, the nine-year-old, the first thing he said when he sat down on our recliner was, "What are the rules in this house?" And I thought, oh, my pride training for foster parent didn't teach me to have a list like that readily available. So, you know, just thinking the children, they need consistency. They want to know what's going on. And when you continually move them from placement to placement, that adds even more trauma to whatever they've already experienced. And I think, you know, one of the big myths out there, too, is that these are bad kids. They're not bad kids at all. They're all very good kids. And they're in foster care at no fault of their own.
Yeah, and that's so easy to lose track of that because it's, for whatever reason, we tend to blame the children in these situations. As the kids tend to blame. You did, mm-hmm. Michelle. What's wrong with me?
Yeah, that's the key question, you know, it's like, what's wrong with me? Why won't anyone take me in? I remember my mom, and when I say mom, I mean my adoptive mom, and I just call her my mom because I don't think of her anything else. But when she adopted me, you know, she told me that I would test the family. You know, I would kind of act out and throw temper tantrums and just kind of ask, you know, my mom thinks, I didn't realize I was doing it, but is this really the one? Is this unconditional? Am I going to be moved? Are they going to give up on me? And my advice to, I know that that's happened to a lot of adoptive parents, and from the other side, my advice is just to stay, you know, stay with them, keep loving them, keep showing them that you are there. You know, you want to keep them in your life forever. You're not going to give up on them. And most of the time, you know, you just become an all-around happier child. And, you know, you show them love when it's showed to you.
Yeah, it's like any other relationship. Is this real? Will this last?
Well, and I've seen that as a GAL, a child that I have now. He has acted out in every – he's had probably over 30 placements since he's been in foster care. But exactly as Michelle stated, he doesn't believe anyone can love him because life to this point and for him has shown him that he's not lovable. So he continues to want someone to prove that they're going to be in it with it for the long run. So it's incredibly hard. It's for the children because they've been traumatized. If we don't also couple their experience with really effective trauma-informed counseling along the way, both while they're in care and aftercare, we can't underestimate the emotional and mental impact that that has on a child and think it's just going to go away and they'll grow out of it. They don't. It's a scarring of their brains and their hearts that really needs to be healed.
Yeah.
So we need to change our lens, and instead of saying, you know, what's wrong with you? Why on earth are you acting this way? We need to look at what happened to that child for them to exhibit the behaviors they're doing. And then for each behavior, it is a communication of an unmet need. And we've got to look and think, okay, there's two routes I can go. If I view this as willful disobedience, I'm going to be much more harsher. I'm not going to be empathetic. But if I view this behavior as survival, and thank goodness that child has that behavior because they survived and they're here today because of that, then I take a totally different parenting approach.
Amen.
Yeah, and Shannon, that's a coping mechanism that that foster and adoptive parents can use. It's just, hey, this isn't personal. They're not coming after us.
Oh, yeah. Stepping out of your own skin, though, saying it's not personal is so much harder than actually feeling and believing that it's not personal. You know, I remember 2 years ago, we found this journal that our counselor had asked me to keep about the different behaviors and the way we handled them and things like that. And my daughter, who's 15 now, found it. And there's all these things that she'd been doing when she was seven. And she was like, oh, Mom, I did not know I was that bad. And I told her, I said, well, you know what I was doing while you were doing all these behaviors? And she goes, crying and eating chocolate in your closet. And I was like, well, on top of that, I was getting fingerprinted and I was filling out paperwork and I was walking the path to make you mine. And that it had us both just remembering that it's not about these behaviors. It's about showing these kids that this is permanency. And just like Michelle said, this could be testing. We don't know what it is. If you walk with empathy, though, you'll never serve them wrong.
850-414-1234, the number that Kaya just gave us a call. Thanks for hanging on the line, Kaya. Welcome to Perspectives.
Hello.
Yes, go right ahead.
Hi, this is Kaya.
Yes, ma'am. Thanks
for doing the program. It's very, very good that you're doing adoption. And this is National Adoption Month, so fantastic. I'm an adoptive parent. My daughter is from Ethiopia, so I did an international adoption. I don't think that's on your schedule today for today's talk, but I would suggest strongly that you have another program on international adoption. A lot of the issues are the same. For example, PTSD, parenting issues, but a lot of them are different. So it'd be great to have both. But I really appreciate everyone being on there. And did I hear somebody say something about therapy animals?
Yes.
That would be me. And we do have one of our sons is adopted internationally from China. He was adopted by a family up in Michigan. And about 3 years into it, the behaviors and the trauma and the post-traumatic stress and the reactive attachment disorder was so hard on this family. They did not feel equipped to handle it. And somehow we got this random call while we were moving to our farm. And this little boy joined our family at 7.5 years old through an adoption disruption in the States. Uh-huh. So I did not physically travel to China, but we had this little Chinese boy.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, he's been with us 4.5 years and I loved he's the one that came with no behavior issues. I was like, so anyway. But yes, I completely completely understand, and I do think that the animal therapy, like you mentioned, was a big part of even his healing, for sure.
Good. My dog and I are animal therapy partners, so we get that. We
awesome.
Really
with pet partners here in Tallahassee.
Yes, we're in cool. Tallahassee with the TMH animal therapy program, and my daughter, the only child I have, so the one that I adopted, she was in the program for a couple of years too, right at the time when she was about 8th, 9th grade. She had been going with me anyway on visits, but not officially. Like, she couldn't handle the dog. You know, officially, she couldn't, like, hold the leash or anything. The handler has to handle the leash. But she got a lot out of that.
Yes.
So that was good for her and good for everybody that
Absolutely.
She was with.
That's
yeah,
terrific.
We really get the trauma, radical attachment. Mm-hmm. The trauma is the biggest thing to me. It's just like, My biggest comment, probably, that I don't know what it's like to be a parent of a domestically adopted child, but no matter how much we read, or at least in my case, how much I read ahead of time, and I read a lot about being an adoptive parent, and about the kinds of issues my child might face and how I might handle them, deal with them. Nothing is like doing it. There is so much we don't know about the challenges, the trauma, how to deal with the trauma, and it was learning trial by fire, frankly.
Amen. Yeah. I think experience is our best teacher, but
it is.
But talking with people who have experienced can be an even better one than all these books.
Right. I agree with you completely. My best support has been with closed or secret Facebook groups of parents who are, you probably know what I'm talking about, parents who are adoptive, and also groups regarding transracial adoption. There are quite a few of those on Facebook groups in dealing with all of these issues that you can be in and get support from people who have been there, done that, and we support each other by asking questions and feeling like we're not all alone out there and getting ideas.
Absolutely.
The other thing is none of the benefits that you all are talking about for domestic adoption, and they're fantastic, are available for children who are adopted internationally.
That's true.
Not everybody will understand that. There's no subsidy.
Except for the tax credit.
Pardon?
Except for the tax credit. The tax credit does apply to adoptions.
You're right. I did get a tax credit, which was really a great help. Because people think adoption is expensive. Like you said, that international adoption can cost so much. And I barely scraped through eligibility-wise to be able to support a child. But I did get that credit, which was a huge help. But we don't get, I don't know if you mentioned free tuition for state universities and colleges. That
yes.
used to be available for adopted kids domestically. Is that still true?
For kids in foster care, yeah.
Yes, uh-huh.
Yeah.
But it does not apply to international because our...
what I mean. It's not available for international, none of the other benefits. Post-adoption support, people say, oh, you can get respite. You can get this. Nope, nothing.
Kaya, gonna have to run. Thank you so much for adding to the conversation. We really appreciate that.
Contact me if you ever want to do something on international.
Thank you, ma'am. We'll do that.
Thanks a lot for doing that.
And we'll be right back here on Perspectives. We are back on Perspectives. We're talking about fostering and adopting kids of various and sundry ages here with our all-star panel, and we do have an email. Sarah wanted to ask about the differences in adopting a baby, a young child, an older child, sibling groups. It seems everyone wants the baby, the little infant, and it's so cute, and it, oh, gee, but then you have, I mean, just like in your case, Michelle, you weren't a little tiny kid the first go around.
No, I always say, I get asked that question a lot, what's the difference the older you get? And my experience is that the older the child is, the longer they've been in the system, the more placements they've had, therefore they tend to have more, anger and then emotional problems and just, act out on it. That's just my opinion.
But Tom, if I can jump in here, I think that is a myth, though, we need to dispel, is that young children are not adopted from foster care system. It's a foster care system. I'm actually sitting next to Dr. Marty Gillen, who adopted two young children from the foster care system. So children under the age of 5 are adopted every day in Florida from the foster care system. So while we certainly hope for those older children also to be adopted, I do want to make sure it's clear to the listeners that infants, unfortunately, and especially it's becoming much more common now with the opioid crisis, we're seeing many more young children in care that need loving homes and need foster homes.
But I do also, on that note, I want to put in a plug for the fact that a lot of these children, before they're verbal, have already been traumatized, but they can't show it. So those children need just as much trauma-informed care as older kids, especially because if they've been their moms have had an opioid addiction, and they've been neglected or abused as a baby. That does scar them too, and they can't express it. They can't show it. It might not outwardly make itself evident, but as they age, get older into the adoption, then we find that those are usually the kids that wind up with disrupted adoptions because they didn't demonstrate any maladaptive behaviors as babies, but then as they get older, it comes out because it was never dealt with. So
sure, surprise. Right. Yeah, yeah. Carla joins us here online, too, on Perspectives. Hi, Carla. Thanks for calling. Are you still there, Carla?
I'm here.
Oh, thank you for hanging on. We appreciate it. Go right ahead, ma'am.
Sure. I just had two comments. One, my husband and I have been foster parents for 9 years, and yesterday we adopted our second, and but we've had 35-plus placements, and all of those children have been able to return home, except for the two that we adopted, to their birth parents or a relative. And we find that keeping the lines of communication open with the birth parents, I try and share pictures every day through an app called Tiny Beans, and just, you know, sharing as much information and being open and non-judgmental can lead to high rates of children being able to return home. Secondly, we're military, so every time we move, we have to get relicensed, and I'm hoping to present a bill to develop some kind of reciprocity for foster parents who are military, that we can go state to state, and if we have a license in good standing, we can begin to foster immediately, because it's a long process. It takes several months, and sometimes I think that disincentivizes families from fostering. And it's not a gimme. We still have to get licensed, but at least we could begin to foster immediately and then work on that state license while we're there. Because sometimes we're only stationed in a place 2 or 3 years. So those are my two comments.
Oh, well, thank you, Carla. Before I let you go here, though, one thing I'd like to know is that what have you found with all of this talk about the challenges and the, you know, possible pitfalls of this whole situation. What have you found personally to have been the most rewarding experiences as a foster and adoptive parent?
Wow. So it's I have 4 children of my own, and we started fostering when the youngest was 2, and they have become just such compassionate people. They, very emotional, but, you know, they're so willing to share their parents and their home and their toys. And now, as they've gotten older, they're just wonderful siblings to all the children that come into our home. So I'm most proud of them.
Thanks for sharing that, Carla. I really appreciate that.
And congratulations on your adoption.
Thank you. It's awesome. She was a foster in Alaska. And through an ICTC process, which is an interstate compact, they allowed her to come to Florida with us. So, you know, I think the OCS and the foster care family, and, you know, they try and work with families in the best interest of the child. And it can be quite daunting and a lot of barriers, but I would just encourage folks to continue to lead with their hearts, keep an open mind, and you know, just love the children. They're just so wonderful and begin to blossom once you invest that time in them. Thank you
so much, Carla. I appreciate your sharing that. But Mary Kay Wimsett, Carla brought up a really good point here about the vetting process that goes on here for foster and adoptive parents. This, and just like Shannon, you don't just come wandering in off the street, say, hey, I want to adopt a kid, and boom, you fill out a little bit of paperwork and it's done. This is a protracted and very convoluted situation, right?
Well, and again, you bring up another myth that it takes a very long time to adopt. It doesn't necessarily. But there are protections in place, of course, because we want to make sure that foster parents or adoptive parents are suitable to adopt or to foster. So for both of those situations, you have to take a class. I would encourage people to call your local CBC. That's the community-based care agency that handles those classes in your area. Those, and I think for your listeners, it's Partnership for Strong Families.
Big Bend Community-Based Care for Circuits 2 and 14.
Thank you. So, and then for the 8th and the 3rd Circuits, it's Partnership for Strong Families. But they have classes. There can be a waiting list for the classes, so I encourage you to get on that waiting list, even if you you know, you think it's still a possibility. The good thing about the classes, too, is you'll learn a lot about the process, and you may decide that it's not for you. But they will give you, again, I tell folks that it's important that they go into the process with eyes wide open. Adoption is not for the faint of heart. So it's good to go to the classes and hear what the experience will be like and hear, know what the expectations will be. And then, of course, up for it to pass, you have to have a home study. You do not have to live in a mansion. You can live in a very small, modest home and have a modest means of income. You do not by any means have to be wealthy. And then once the child is placed with you, I think it's also important that we understand you don't accept placement of a child, and if the child's free for adoption, you adopt the next day. And for adoptive parents listening, they're laughing right now because it's unfortunately a very long process sometimes in terms of when they're ready to adopt. It seems like it can take longer than they'd like it to. But the law requires that the child be in that placement for at least 90 days before they can be adopted. And during those 90 days, keep in mind there's court supervision. The CBC and the guardian ad litem are also involved still with the family at that time. So there are lots of different support opportunities for the family while that piece is pending. But, you know, so potentially, though, if you take your classes and you accept placement rather quickly, you know, adoption can happen within a year or two. It is not a 10-year process.
Okay, well, that's one myth that we have just dispelled. Are there any others that are floating around out there that could potentially be an impediment to getting more kids and parents together? Anybody?
Well, I'm going to say that adoption is not the only option. If you have a heart for kids in foster care, but you're not ready for adoption, you can start in the low end of the pool, like being a guardian ad litem, which is still pretty involved, but you're not taking a child into your home. But as your mom saw, she was a guardian ad litem who then became an adoptive parent serendipitously. So I would just encourage people not just to think that if I don't adopt, I can't really help. There's a whole continuum of opportunities for people to help kids in foster care. And you can be a volunteer just and support your local foster parent association as well. But again, I just, you know, starting out as a guardian ad litem, there's training for that. But that's and you can take on as many or as few kids as you know you can handle. It's a very supportive network of folks all over the state. So just don't think that adoption is the only way to make a difference in the lives of these children.
We already remarked. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry, Tom. Just quick. I just wanted to add. You can do something as simple as make dinner for a foster family. So there are now, thanks to social media, there are now groups all over the state that support foster parents. So our foster parent support group, I think they do a wonderful job, Dr. Marty's a part of it, of posting the needs. So they post they need a car seat at the last minute. They need a crib. There's a family that just took placement of five siblings, and can't someone bring them dinner tonight? So we had a foster mom recently who donated her kidney to one of the children in her foster home, and the community came together, and we provided meals for them for, I think, 3 or 4 months. So there's plenty of ways that you can get involved, even just on a micro level, if you just want to do a little something that will really make a – for any parents out there, we're adoptive, or you know, dinner is – that's always a hectic time. So someone bringing you dinner is a huge – can be a huge help.
Or Shannon Carroll, is it ever like someone just pops in and says, hey, you guys need a break from the kids in the zoo, and, you know, come on, we'll take you out for, you know, drinks and a movie or something.
Oh, yes. Well, praise the Lord, my oldest are 15 and 16 now and are responsible enough. But there was a season when they were all under 10 and you wondered if you were going to be a prisoner in your own home for much longer because... But yes, getting out is such, I mean, I feel like it's sometimes better than a counseling session, just being able to sit and not wipe anything or hear that anything needs to be wiped. And yes, it's been very good. And I just wanted to say that, you know, one of the biggest things I hear is like, I don't want the state in my house. I don't want these people looking at everything I do. And you can be completely real and normal. Anybody who knows me knows how real and normal I am. Yet, you know, we have all these kids with such needs in our home. But you really get to practice hospitality. You get all these people in your home who just want to be loved. These social workers are just doing their job and just need somebody to reach out and say, you know, we appreciate you. And these bio moms sometimes grew up in the same facets that our foster kids are dealing with, and they just need somebody to say, I care and I love about you. I love you and this is what I love about you. And then our kids just need to know that there's something about them that can be loved. So we get to create a little community in our home of just hospitality and love and care for strangers.
That interconnection is what it's all about there. Absolutely. In the few moments we have left, let's add Eva to our conversation here on the phone. Hi, Eva. Thanks for calling. Welcome to Perspectives. Hello, Eva.
Hello?
Yes, go right ahead, ma'am.
Hi. Yes, I wanted to just call in just so I'm a licensed mental health therapist here in Tallahassee. I'm also a provider for Big Bend community-based care as a child parent psychotherapist and registered play therapist. I'm also an adoptive parent, and we kind of got into adoption a little in a more unconventional way, I guess. The child we ended up adopting, I actually had started, he was referred to me for play therapy in one of the outer counties, and we just ended up kind of going through and adopting him. And it's been, and he came into our home with a lot of trauma. He was severely neglected. At 3 years old, he had no language at all because of the severe neglect and abuse. A lot of, traumatic meltdowns happening. But my husband and I are both, my husband's a social worker, and me being a therapist, we knew kind of how to deal with it. So so now he's 6 years old. He's thriving. He's actually just tested out of speech therapy because now he's at a normal level for speech, and he's doing awesome. But I just wanted to offer, I know you all were talking about your parent groups, adoptive parent groups, and, I'd definitely be willing to come and talk to you all and, the adoptive parents about trauma and kids and offering my support any way I can as a therapist and an adoptive mother.
That's terrific,
so
Carla.
To put that out there.
Well, hang on the line here. We'll have Lydell get your contact information. We'll pass it along to the panel then. We appreciate that input here. In just a second, as time is flying. Michelle Scott, what is ahead for you? Major statistics, FSU, whole world and universe in front of you here. So what's next?
I graduate in December.
Wow.
So in about 6 weeks, I graduate, which is a huge accomplishment. And I am hoping to get a job somewhere, a job offer still in the works. Everyone kind of knows that post-grad anxiety. So I'm kind of experiencing that right now. But I'm just thankful to be graduating from college.
Well, it's just purely speculative and way 10,000 years in the future. But, should the circumstances present themselves, would you ever adopt a kid?
I would. If it were, it would just have to be the right fit, absolutely, for my household. But I definitely would. I mean, I know the benefits and how rewarding it is on both ends and the need for it. So absolutely.
You're an incredibly strong person. It's such a delight to talk to you today. Really,
thank you.
Thanks for coming on. And any final thoughts, Dr. Marty Gillen down at Gator Strong Families at the university?
Like I said, just thinking about the need and how even if you can't foster or adopt, there's still a place at the table for you and how you can wrap around and provide assistance to families.
And any final words of encouragement from you, Mary Kay?
No, just thank you for featuring this important topic, and I hope that some people are inspired by listening to the show today.
Well, thank you for providing a big chunk of that inspiration from your view. And Shannon Carroll, it's back to the kids. It's back to the zoo. And if anyone wants to check out Redemptive Love Farm, you guys are open, ready to take in even more folks, right?
Yes. Thank you so much for the business plug. But just even to piggyback off that last call and how it is so neat to have people in the system that are so equipped to handle special needs. But then to also dispel another myth that can come with that is that you have to be equipped to handle special needs. When we got a call about our daughter who lived in a hospital for 10 years of her life and she had the best doctors and we were told she was on a 7-month-old functioning level at 10 years old biologically. She had cerebral palsy and a G-tube and all these disorders that I can't even pronounce on the radio without making a fool out of myself. And I prayed and I thought, I am not a nurse. I can't do this. I am not equipped for a child of this kind of care level. And somebody who is dear to me said, you know, this child's problem is not that she needs more nurses, that she needs more doctors, that she needs more therapists. Her problem is that she's an orphan and she needs a mom and a dad. And so that's where we stepped in. I could be a mother. And that's what a lot of our listeners can be.
Jane Johnson, that's our final thought.
The final word is adoption is about love.
There you go. And that sums it up beautifully. Folks, thank you so much for being a part of a great discussion today here on Perspectives. Produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance today by Evan Rossi and Lydell Rawls on all of our interconnects. And thanks also to Margie Menzel for facilitating this incredible panel today. I'm Tom Flanagan. Next week in advance of Veterans Day, we're going to have some vets in here to talk about what service means not only to them, but also to all of us. That'll be next week right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.